Good morning, everyone. My name is Ron Menlapas. I'm a UX designer for Windows Phone, and this is Ryan Bickel, who's our visual interaction designer. So what we're going to go through now is application deconstructed. We thought the best way to kind of go through a lot of our controls was to create an app and give you kind of the context behind how these controls are used. We're not going to go into detail into like every single control, but kind of give you a high level idea of what kind of things would come up in terms of interaction and how to kind of place it, buckets of information and organize them within pivots, app bars, app menus. So I'm going to pass off to Ryan.
So the app that we kind of decided to build, get out of your way, was a golf demo app. It's basically focused around the scorekeeping aspect of golf. We found that a lot of the current apps, whether it's iPhone or the Sky Caddy type apps, focus more on the actual shot data and maps. So we wanted to kind of simplify that and really just focus on the scorekeeping and kind of what happens in between each hole, right? So the first screen we'd have to build in this app would be our start experience. We have the start tiles on the live tiles on the left and our static flat all apps list on the right. The notification you can see here is populated in, and that could be pinned to any type of data that we felt like could feed into the tile. You can see here, too, we've opted out of the text string, which is available, and just provided a flat PNG so that the branding can come through on the tile. Another thing we always wanted to say about start tiles is the use of rounded corners. We know that this can be faked, but it's actually going to throw off a little bit of the geometry in the way that these notifications are placed. So we ask that you don't do that. And Chad, who's coming up later, is going to talk about some of the PSD tools and so forth. This is just an example of sort of the start tile specs, showing a lot of the different layers that can be composited together to create your tile, a combination of PNG graphics, some of the live type that you can either opt out of, and the notification and just sort of the placement. So our first screen, really, after launching off the start tile would be this sort of loading screen. It's inevitable that most apps are going to take some time to load. So we wanted to soften the experience by creating sort of a splash screen for the user. One thing that comes for free in this example, it's basically just a static background PNG with you know, the branding on there and the photo, but it has the weight cursor control, which is really just these animated dots and the text string. The text string can say really anything you want that's pertinent, but for these purposes it just says loading, and the dots will animate in as the app's trying to load, just again softening that wait time for the user. And it's really easy just to build as using a common control. As far as the text string, or the animation out of the box is just the fixed dots that you know will animate in off screen, and then you have control over what that text string says. So after the app loads, we've created sort of a landing screen or home screen in this case. It just uses a standard list view. We have the app branding at the top, and it has nice, comfortable touch targets in this list view. We had the photo persist from the splash screen in this case. Another thing I wanted to point out was that we have this system tray, which lives at the top of the screen here, and it's actually 32 pixels high. The shell can actually throw that down, or the user can initiate it by tapping on the clock. And so we want to recommend that everybody keep that in mind when they're setting this top title, to know that the system tray icons can come down in this space right here and potentially obscure important content. So this is kind of the meat of the app here, where we'd start by selecting a course. And this is kind of setting up sort of an inductive workflow or task flow, where we're going to select a course and then select what players we want to play in our group. So we start by three really distinct list views, all under the same pivot structure of recent courses, which would be like your favorites, nearby, which are map-based, and then just an all-up list or flat list that could be provided by the app's database. Another element here that we leverage a lot in the Metro layouts that we've done is this lockup here between the all caps title and the pivot. And whether there's actually a dynamic pivot or not, we actually use that just as an anchoring element in our UIs, just to create a nice hierarchy and sort of a wayfinding system. So you can leverage both of these text strings, again, whether it's just static text or the dynamic pivot, it just adds a nice anchoring element to reinforce the navigation as to where you're at. This is just an example of some of our list view templates. This is just a really small sampling. The list view is probably one of the more robust controls in terms of flexibility that we're providing. And these are just showing examples of the Photoshop templates. But list control is really flexible. It can allow you to set wrapping behavior, how many lines of text per list item, whether you have an icon or not, and if so, what size. And then we also offer a few grid view templates, whether it's four across, two across, and so forth. Most of these Photoshop templates that Chad will be talking about later, too, have the touch targets or recommended touch targets built in as green lines. Green lines is just the term we use for the touch target area, as you saw in some of T's decks. So I also want to talk about this little trick that we use. Jeff Fong talked a bit about cropping and how to kind of embrace, words getting cut off so that the user knows there's more content. In the case of panos to the right, or in the case of a list at the bottom of the fold. And often what we do is we'll take those recommended touch targets and add just like a pixel or two to each list item so that by the time you get to the bottom of the list, that last item is being clipped and makes it really obvious that it's a scrolled list. So now that we've chosen a course off of one of our pivot lists, we get into this detail view of the course. And here, this is really similar to like our contact card screen. And what we've done is we've used the app bar to expose the primary task of done, meaning you want to use that course. And then a lot of these secondary tasks we put in line with the page. There's a couple advantages to that, which are being able to expose the actual data, like in this case, the phone number, which you wouldn't be able to do via an icon or even a text button on the app bar. And then it also allows for information that's dynamic, where that list of phone directions and website may actually grow down the page. Okay, the player selection flows is really similar to the course selection flow. Difference is we have this custom element at the top, which is just to show you the group order. Otherwise, these are standard list types across three distinct pivots, allowing you to select your players either based off of your common friends, preset groups that you've created, or, again, just an all-up list of all the courses, or players, rather. So sometimes you get into the problem with these lists becoming really long and people having to scroll. And we have a common control available called the quick jump grid. And this can be used in a couple of different ways. You see it in our contacts list as an alphabetized group header. So in this case, we're using the state names So the tile actually goes the full width of the screen, but often you'll see it just as a single block with the letter A, for example. And what the user will do is tap on that group header and be presented with an overlay UI with, in this case, all the state names. They'd be able to tap there, and the list underneath would refresh to take you to that point in the list. It just makes scrolling more efficient. The context menu is the primary control we use to directly manipulate list items. We have this control available as a press and hold gesture to bring it up. We really think it's important that that gesture be maintained and not customized in any way, because it will aid in the discoverability for the user. Also, this control allows up to 5 items. So we have templates for 1, 3, and 5 items, which will just snap the menu to those text sizes. Okay, so now that we've selected our course and our players, we're about to tee off. And we have this confirmation screen here, which we were just kind of imagining, you know, if you're on the first hole and you've done this work to set up your round, it's just going to be nice to confirm to the user what exactly they've set up and that they're ready to go. I kind of included this in there, one, also to talk about the opportunity for a custom touch target. In this case, there is only one task on the screen, which is start the round. Of course, you could hit the hardware back button to go back, but this is an opportunity where you can analyze if this is a distracted scenario and possibly make this standard push button have a larger hit target to make it much easier for the user to tap. Okay, now we've started playing, and this is the scorecard view. Right, this is just a standalone push button, and that can occur. I think the question was why not use the app bar here versus the standalone push button, and it's really just because the screen is so simple. You're not going to have a secondary menu, which another thing the app bar affords is that spillover menu, and so just being one task, I wanted to show the ability to customize that touch target and just keep it in line with the rest of the content. And again, this is a little bit more of an inductive flow, so it's kind of wizard-like. So the scorecard is a little bit more custom than some of these previous screens. One of the keys here is that we've decided that it would be a lot easier rather than populating with edit fields and using the keyboard for your score entries. We kind of took a cue from the real like GPS systems on the courses themselves, where they don't have a QWERTY keyboard, and we would just let the user tap through their score. Since most people hopefully aren't going to get more than say a 10 on any given hole. Another part about this is that we have in total 3 distinct touch targets. We have the plus minus for entering the score in the middle, and then we set it up so that the photo and the name is another distinct touch target, and we've spread those to the left and right of the score, the score being static or non-touchable, and that just creates a really nice distinction between those two separate tasks. So the tapping on the name will actually take you to the player stats card. And this stats form is kind of an optional process where at some point the player would be able to enter something about the hole, you know, a good shot or specific stats. This is really similar to kind of a settings page. It has all the checkbox and radio button type widgets. And we have this custom graph, which is kind of supposed to show you, you know, your last shot in comparison to some of the previous. If this was a map, the chart here is about your last drive, so we've decided that when you scroll this list, this map, or the chart rather, will scroll off with the rest of the content. But you can easily have this, like, as the map from the previous list view, you could easily have that persist and create your scroll point below the map. And then this is just a view of the stats form being scrolled up, revealing some more of the widgets. And here we actually do have a comments edit field where we've shown the edit field move up to stay in view, the software keyboards deployed. And then here we have sort of the finishing screens where we introduce this rotation behavior, kind of a fairly simple, just read-only, no input required on the landscape view. But our idea was that from any point in one of these scorecards on any hole, the user could just rotate and reposture and get the more traditional metaphor of a scorecard. And that can actually be panned. And you'll see how some of this all gets stitched together. Jeff Arnold is going to come up and show us a bit about motion, and he's actually going to tie a lot of these screens together to really make it sing.
The only other thing I want to point out in terms of system awareness is for the system notifications, which are going to appear up in this area. And I believe it's 42 pixels high. So it's a little taller than the system notification tray. So I just want you to be aware that if you push content above that point, it will be covered by a system tray, which covers, which is kind of a top-level notification that will obstruct anything you put underneath there. So just aware, be aware that if you put content up here, it's going to get blocked. Yep. So the question was, what happens when we go landscape? Where does the notification go? It's the same size. This example didn't show it, but we do rotate the system tray itself, but the notification stays up here. Yep. Yeah, so there's going to be a system tray, which is always accessible to the user.
At the same time.
Okay. Right. So if you had the system tray deployed and a notification came up, the notification toast would be above the system tray. It's a toast that will time out. Yes. The system tray is 32, and the notification toast is 42.